Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, March 29th, 2007. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week, part two of our mini-series on sanitization. Charlie Talley from Five Star Chemicals joins us to talk about his product, StarSan. But much to my surprise, Charlie spent the first half of the interview talking about the proper use of household bleach for home brewing sanitization. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through the basic and more advanced brewing techniques. Now, before I get into the meat of the show, I want to take a moment to tell you about a new homebrew shop, or at least new to us, that's selling our DVDs. Now, I usually don't do this because I don't want to be seen as playing favorites among our friends at the homebrew shops. However, this is our first homebrew shop in the UK. James from beertech.co.uk contacted me wanting to become a vendor. And if you go to his site and look for the books, DVDs, and magazines link on the left navigation bar, you can find our videos. I mention this because James might be able to ship the DVDs cheaper to UK and EU customers, certainly than I can. So if you're in the UK or the EU, beertech.co.uk. You can also go to basicbrewing.com and click on the Where to Buy link to find a link to beertech.co.uk and all of the wonderful American homebrew shops who also sell our DVDs. And we're very grateful to all of our domestic vendors who are helping to keep this little homebrewing podcast afloat, as well as all of you out there, of course. I've gotten a bunch of positive response about our conversation last week with Merle Landman of National Chemicals on iodophore. Many of you were grateful for the useful information that Merle passed on, and some had additional questions. So I thought I would share some of those with you and some of the answers as well. Of course, be kind of silly just to have the questions, wouldn't it? Some asked about the proper way to measure iodophore, and here's what Merle said. He said, there are a few methods to measure this, and I will let you determine what will work best for you. First, we should look at the conversion, since small volumes are often measured in milliliters, or 1/1000th of a liter. 1/10 of an ounce equals 2.957 milliliters. And Merle says, for your purposes, you can round up and assume 3 milliliters. Next, I will outline a number of measuring strategies, and you can choose a method that works for you. Number one, apothecary cup. Merle says, visit your local pharmacy. They should have a small medicine cup that has 1/10 of an ounce or 3 milliliter gradations. Number two, the dropper method. Based on the viscosity properties of iodophore, you can assume 20 drops per milliliter. This would require 60 drops per gallon. Number three, graduated cylinder. This is a basic laboratory tool that you may be able to purchase through your local high school or college chemistry department. Number four, use 2.5 gallons of solution. 5 gallons of 12.5 parts per million solution is often more than what a typical homebrewer may need for one sanitation event, Merle says. I suggest using 2.5 gallons with 1/4 ounce concentrate and mixing it in a 5-gallon pail, so 1/4 ounce to 2.5 gallons. Merle says you can use a measuring cup and funnel to then disperse a volume of sanitizer into your brewing vessel using the swirl technique to cover all surfaces. Now, some of you asked about how long to store iodophore solution. Merle says the quick answer, it is not suggested to store diluted iodophore solutions for longer than 8 to 24 hours. And here's the explanation. Concentrated iodophore is very stable, and when stored in the right conditions, limited heat, sun, and UV exposure, it can remain within specifications for more than 20 years. Merle says, I've actually tested 2 lots of 20-year-old ideally stored BTF iodophore packaged in 4-ounce containers, and 100% of the samples passed specs. However, once you dilute the iodophore, the lifespan is reduced to less than 60 hours in ideal water conditions and less than 24 hours in typical water conditions. Some aggressive water conditions, high pH, excessive iron, calcium, or biological load, will reduce that time to 8 hours or less. Part of this deals with the low concentration of iodine required for sanitizing levels. Hence, economy on one side, low concentration, is less economical on another, short lifespan. However, on further analysis, the short lifespan and low concentration is a benefit when dealing with brewing environments, so that the limited remnants that may remain in the brewing vessel have a negligible short and long-term impact on the product. Chuck, who is from Earthenwood Studio, not sure where Chuck is, but he does some amazing artwork at Earthenwood Studio, has this question. My question is somewhat environmental. What are the effects, if any, iodophore and other sanitizers might have to a household's pipes, and further on into reprocessing and perhaps the local water table? Merle says, first, I'd like you to know that all our products are biodegradable and nitrate-free. We do use sulfites in some of the detergent and cleaners, but not as primary ingredients and only when there are no other reasonable options. Merle says, surprisingly enough, one of the primary sources for sulfite introduction into the public water supply comes from shampoo. Well, you know, that's less of a concern with me nowadays. with regards to home plumbing, Merle says, you should have no concerns as long as you flush with a moderate amount of water. Chlorine and strong acids are corrosive to metals, particularly cast iron, but at the concentration levels you would typically be working with, there's nothing to be concerned about. So there you go. Some of you asked about temperature and iodophore. Merle says, heat and hot water is very useful during the detergency phase of cleaning, your first step. However, cool water should always be used with iodophore. Iodine is considerably more sensitive to heat than chlorine, so using cool or cold water is really important. And that was news to me. I'd always used hot water and sanitizing with iodophore because it just seems like hot water would do a better job. There you go. Another thing I learned from our chats with our experts here on Basic Brewing Radio. Kim from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, called into question Merle's assertions about home canners and sterilization. And here's what Merle had to say. On review of the podcast, I did make a mistake on my numbers. For some reason or another, I was thinking about reactor vessels and not autoclaves. Kim is correct. 15 PSI is all that is needed, and canners will sterilize. So there you go. Merle stands corrected. But he does go on to say that you basically have to fit what you need to sterilize into the canner, and using the steam itself produced with a canner outside of the canner, you know, just spraying steam on stuff is not a practical way to sanitize, or certainly to sterilize. So, a lot of great information there, and I appreciate Merle's quick responses to all your questions. It's an excellent service, and really pleased with all the information that we got out with that episode. Now, let's go on to the second part in our sanitization series, our interview with Charlie Talley from Five Star Chemicals. I asked Charlie to come on the show to get information about StarSan, since he did invent the product. However, when I got him on the line, he spent a lot of time talking about how to use household bleach properly as a home brewing sanitizer. Now, as you probably know, bleach has been maligned by many people in the home brewing hobby, so it was kind of a shock to hear Charlie, inventor of StarSan, talking about how effective it can be if it's used properly. But of course, he also spent a good bit of time talking about StarSan as well. Of course. Now, here's a warning. Listen carefully to Charlie's instruction on using household bleach. At one point, he talks about using vinegar with bleach in a water solution. Now, you don't want to mix bleach and vinegar directly. Do not mix bleach and vinegar directly. Follow Charlie's directions. And if you have any doubt as to how to do it properly, don't. Buy a bottle of Starsan or iodophore and use that instead. Fair warning. I don't want anybody to hurt themselves doing something they think they heard on the show. So pay very close attention. Okay. With that said, now that you're all scared, I just want to dot my I's and cross my T's and make sure everybody understands. Okay. Let's get on to our interview with Charlie Talley of Five Star Chemicals. Well, Charlie Talley, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Glad to be here.
Now, you are the founder of Five Star Chemicals.
That's correct.
And before we get started, give us a little background on yourself and of Five Star.
Well, myself, I've been in the chemical specialty business ever since 1968. And in that time, I developed a number of materials, more or less hand sanitizers. I developed the Starsan type product in 1971, so it's been around for quite some time. And I introduced it actually into the home brewing market somewhere in the 1991-92. And I did that only because a few of my friends that are home brewers asked me for a sanitizer, and I said, this is probably one of the better ones that you could use. Where my background comes from is that I was a chemist for Penwalt Chemical. And Penwalt Chemical was a manufacturer of bleach, chloralkali products. We would take salt and turn it, change it from regular old table salt into sodium hydroxide, which is drain opener, into chlorine gas, and the hydrogen gas, make hydrochloric acid from it, and bubble the chlorine gas back into the caustic soda, make bleach. And most of the bleach that we sold was with Purex. And being around for as long as I have been, I knew EPA ever since, matter of fact, before they were born. So I have a lot of stories about them, but that's probably for another time. We're going to talk, I guess, basically about general sanitation. And general sanitation is kind of an interesting thing because, chlorine is the granddaddy of them all. And it's been around, it's the beginning. Matter of fact, EPA runs all of their tests based on what chlorine does. And chlorine, and when I say chlorine, I'm actually talking about bleach, it doesn't really kill until you get your pH down to around 4. Well, I mean not 4, but 8. And when you get down there at that 8 level, the best way to do it is to add vinegar to it. But at the same time, if you add too much, you gas. And that's probably one of the reasons why it's not really well publicized. They're afraid that overzealous users will somehow wind up and gas themselves. I've never really found that to be the case because most people can measure pretty close, but it is one of those things.
So you have the double of experience of using or knowing how to use chlorine bleach properly and manufacturing a product that does it, I would assume, more easily.
Yes. Yeah, we can actually, there's so many things that have changed over the years in the business, and one of the things that has changed is that it's like anything else. It's more production than it is anything else, and it's easier to pump stuff out and not worry about it than to actually take the time and formulate stuff the correct way. When it comes to chlorine bleach, for example, it's very simple to not put as much sodium hydroxide in there now, what they do. Your average bleach that you buy off the shelf right now has 0.75% of free caustic soda in it. And they put that in there. Specifically, it's easier than trying to eliminate all the iron that degrades bleach and try to eliminate a lot of the hard minerals. that you'll pick up either from splitting the salt or from just the makeup water itself. And when they do that, and that extra sodium hydroxide that's in there, that gets in the way of killing. It doesn't allow the bleach to produce a very specific killer. It's called hypochlorous acid. This isn't a chemistry lesson, and there is no test afterwards.
Good.
But essentially, if you don't produce this particular compound, hypochlorous acid, you'll see it bleach the, everybody has bathroom mold. Everybody goes up, they get a little bit of bleach, they throw it on the mold, it turns white, they think they killed it, and then next week it's back growing again, and they're going, well, what did I do wrong? You didn't do anything wrong. You just never killed it. All you did was change its color.
Hmm.
And that's the thing that everybody hangs their hat on. Tilex hangs their hat on it, and all these other commercial brand names hang their hat on it. And it's just what everybody is brought up to understand or think of. They think bleach is the killer. Even EPA thinks bleach is a killer. And even EPA doesn't tell people that they have to change the pH for it to be a killer.
So how can you tell if you've got good bleach or bleach that's been adulterated?
The best way to tell is by the color itself. A good bleach will have a nice, clear, yellowish-green color to it. Bleach that is going south on you will have a cloud in it. That's the first indicator. The second indicator is that you're not going to pick up any real odor. Good bleach will always have a slight chlorine odor to it, and that slight chlorine odor isn't really chlorine, it's hypochlorous acid. And that's, like I said, that's your real killer. And what all these store brands are doing is that they think it only goes into a washing machine.
Hmm.
They're only interested in making sure that everybody's underwear looks super white.
Which is important.
Well, it's a good thing, you know, but...
Especially if you're in an accident. Any mother will tell you.
Yeah, it is a good thing. But it's something that when it comes to home brewing and when you see these home brewing books and stuff like that, there should be an article specifically on it. There should be a page specifically on it because it's an easy sanitizer to pick up. It's easy to have. Everybody has it. Everybody has some of it in their house.
Would a good rule of thumb to follow be the cheaper the better as far as bleach is concerned in that way?
Yeah. Store brand bleaches will traditionally have less sodium hydroxide in them. And the reason being is that the Cloroxes of the world want to sell their product. They'll make it for everybody else, but they want to sell their product before they sell anybody else's. And the best way to do it is not quite put all the caustic that they do in it, and then it degrades faster on the shelf. It doesn't white the clothes. Whitening the clothes drops off faster, and so they go back to the national brand.
It's all marketing.
It's all marketing.
So if you're buying bleach, buy the cheapest that you can buy, and buy probably a smaller bottle, because if you buy a big jug of the stuff, it's going to hang around
on you.
Yeah, yeah. It's like buying aspirin. You don't buy the hugest bottle of aspirin that you can find because it goes bad.
In this case, smaller is better. Cheaper is better.
So now that we've got our cheap bleach, what's the proper way to use it?
All your bleach is going to be at 5%, and it's actually at 5.25%. And the reason being is that there is a little bit of degradation. It starts to degrade as soon as it comes out of the tank. It's not my fault. It's just the way it is. And when it happens that way, your 5% is at 50,000 parts per million. So at 50,000 parts per million, you're going to have, let me see, I can do this. I used to do it real well. I have a calculator here. I'm cheating. But normally 1 ounce in 5 gallons of water will produce about 80 parts per million of chlorine. 80 parts per million of chlorine is all you need to do do proper sanitation, provided you also follow that with 1 ounce of vinegar, white vinegar preferably.
So when you say follow, what do you
mean? In other words, you take your 5 gallons of water, you add 1 ounce of bleach, and then you add 1 ounce of vinegar. Never, ever add the vinegar to the bleach and then add it to the water. You can, but you'll remember why I said never, ever do it.
Because of the gas.
Because of the gas. It'll come up and kiss you in the face right away.
Hmm.
Jump down on the floor and tell you I'm not going to be there anymore.
That's not good.
Yeah.
And that would be enough for me to, you know, kind of shy away from the whole thing.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why it's not really well mentioned. But to do a service and to all the homebrewers that are out there listening to you, it's why sometimes homebrewers have a great success with bleach. That's why some homebrewers don't have a great success with bleach. And the ones that have great success with bleach isn't because they're actually adding vinegar to it. It's because they scrub better. They're actually cleaning better. And they're sanitizing, quite frankly, a clean vessel, an absolutely 100% clean vessel. And that, quite frankly, is one of the main keys in this whole wonderful world of mysticism.
So if someone cleans well enough, in theory, then you wouldn't have to sanitize.
It's recommended, but it's not necessary, yes, absolutely.
And if you're going to all the trouble of brewing, you might as well go to all the steps that you can.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's an insurance policy, is what it is. You're taking out a little bit of insurance on how well you cleaned.
So just to kind of tidy up our conversation on bleach, how long would you soak? And then at that concentration of 1 ounce per 5 gallons and then the 1 ounce of vinegar after, rinsing, is it required?
When at that level, rinsing is not required, okay? And there's a lot of other scare tactics out there about producing chloramines and doing this and doing that and all the other wonderful things that are out there. You don't have to rinse when you're at 80 parts per million. It's virtually impossible to even taste it at that level. You can rinse if you want, but if you rinse, make sure that your water is sterile. Because if you're rinsing, water that comes out of the tap water, your potable water, it has microorganisms in it. And that's one of the reasons of always using a no-rinse sanitizer,
mm-hmm.
is specifically for that reason. You can't really trust the water that comes out of the tap.
Right.
So, all that being said, just a little aside, every major brewery in the United States, when it goes through the twist rinser, where they rinse out their bottles before they fill them, it sees a 5 parts per million solution of sodium hypochlorite bleach at a pH of 5, because they're maximizing the sodium hypochlorite that's in the water, or it's in the product itself.
So how much contact time would you have with the bleach solution?
You need 30 seconds.
Huh. I've always heard a much longer time with the bleach solution.
Yeah, a lot of, well, if you get the pH right, that's all you need. If you're high in causticity, it doesn't matter how long you have it in contact. it's kind of like real estate. It's location, location, and location.
So let's step back and talk in generality. I mean, we've already covered one product, but let's step back and talk in generality about your philosophy of sanitization.
Sanitization should be always your last step, whatever you're doing. And actually, it should be actually your first step. A lot of people will clean, and then they'll go out and they'll sanitize, and they'll leave their equipment laying around, and then they'll come back and they go, oh, I sanitized that, and then they start to brew. And that's not correct. The best way to always have a clean vessel, a sanitary situation, is to clean first, make sure it's clean, and then, just before you're ready to brew, sanitize. The reason being is that you have no idea how long or where the dust, the air as it blows through the buildings or whatnot like that, bacteria will come in, and all of a sudden you're infected just because the air blew.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do a good job of cleaning, you don't have to worry about sanitizing right away. All you've got to do is just leave it around. Then when you're ready to brew, sanitize. That way you're bringing them all of your forces to bear, so to speak, at that initial point in time, and you're not going to have any infections.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys will clean, sanitize, close it up, and say, "Well, I sanitized this thing last year, so it should be fine." No, it's not. So instead of wasting time and energy, do it once, but do it at the right time.
Now, I've heard of people baking their bottles and then putting tin foil or aluminum foil,
sure,
over the tops, and then putting them in the basement or whatever, and then feeling secure that those bottles are still sanitized.
I used to do dry air sterilization when I was in the lab, and you can do that, and you can get a reasonable period of time of sterility. And what I mean by you can do that in a reasonable period of time, the standard microbiological method is to heat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, put whatever glassware you're going to sterilize in there, bake it or keep it in there for 3.5 hours, let it cool inside the oven, and then bring it out. When you do that, you'll get the maximum sterilization of the bottles. Now, depending on how the aluminum foil is attached to the necks of the bottle, will determine how long the bottle will stay sterile. I never kept my glassware after using heat sterilization for more than a month.
Mm.
After that, I don't know. It was either I didn't close them correctly. I don't know what happened, but maybe the tin foil starts to give away. I don't know, but I would run into periodic infections. So I would only do it for roughly 30 days, and then I would reheat them.
So that's
reheating them doesn't hurt you either.
Uh-huh.
But the key is that time, 3.5 hours, and that temperature, 350 degrees. They're the two keys.
And heating up the bottles, you don't have to worry so much about the breaking, or?
Well, you put them in, and you never put them in the oven at 350 degrees. You put them in and then let the oven come up.
Okay.
And it doesn't break. And I used to, I would sterilize beakers. I sterilized glass pipettes. They look like little glass straws. I sterilized all sorts of types of glassware, and I never had any breakage as long as I followed that procedure.
Now, are we ready to move on into star sand?
The reason for star sand, quite frankly, I developed that as a direct response when Iodoforce came on the market. And I developed it because the Iodoforce were a fantastic replacement for bleach in farm use, in dairy farms. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to come up with something a little bit better, something a little bit, something that had a little bit of pizzazz, I guess is the best way to put it. And what we came up with star sand is, chemically it's referred to as an acid anionic detergent or sanitizer. The acid anionic is a synergistic killing machine. In other words, the acid by itself will not kill bacteria. The anionic detergent by itself will not kill bacteria. The combination of the two in the correct ratio is an absolute stone killer. It kills in the presence of organic material, and it kills the entire range of organisms, gram-negatives, gram-positives, yeast, molds, and spores. It's a sporicidal as well. So it was kind of a neat product. Its drawback was is that, as anybody that's out there that uses it, it foams.
Yeah.
But one of the things that why I introduced it into the home brewing market was because of the foaming action. because I know a lot of home brewers are out there. They brew or they use as brights or serving tanks or these Cornelius kegs and or these reconverted soft drink units. And it's very difficult to, like I was saying, the scrubbing portion is to scrub up in the tops of the units, of the kegs, and get the croizen that may develop up there out of the keg. And the because the foaming action will hit the top of the keg, and it also because it kills in the presence of organic material, if the cleaning isn't absolutely 100% correct, you're going to get a high level of sanitation. And that's the key, or that's the real mechanism of why the star sand works and why so many people are raving about it, is because it gives you that little extra step if I didn't quite get everything out of there that I wanted to.
So it's part detergent, so it cleans as well as sanitizes.
Absolutely. That's why it's referred to as a detergent sanitizer.
Now, you mentioned the four-letter word that starts with F, and on most postings that I've seen with questions about star sand, it has to deal with foam. And a lot of people are scared of it, and a lot of people say, I don't want, you know, I've got a whole bunch of foam in my carboy. I don't want that in my beer.
Absolutely, and it's a concern because a lot of things that are out there and that make foam aren't really the greatest things in the world to be putting in your body.
Besides beer.
So when I developed this material, one of the things, because I had mentioned, like I mentioned before, we developed it originally for the farm, for the dairy farm, for sanitizing milk trucks, essentially. We made a conscious effort to find materials that were on the grass list, generally recognized as safe. And we even went a step further and found out that everything that we were using, or we could use for this product, is food grade. So the phosphoric acid that we use is the same phosphoric acid that you find in soft drinks.
Hmm.
If everybody turns around and looks at a Coke can or a Pepsi can and reads the ingredients, they're going to see phosphoric acid on the label. And that phosphoric acid is the same phosphoric acid that's in star sand. The DDBSA, which sounds extremely nasty, it stands for dodecylbenzene sulfonic acid, or linear sulfonic acid. And linear sulfonic acid is the acid version of the bubbles in toothpaste. So you have, and the third ingredient that's in this product is propylene glycol. And propylene glycol is used universally in candy making and in food applications as a what they refer to as a humectant. It makes things moister, softer. So all the ingredients that are in star sand, people have ingested and ingest every day.
Although you wouldn't advocate eating it right out of the container.
No, it's not a recommended thing. Only because the concentration of the phosphoric acid that's in there will remove materials like formica. Things like that. But when you're at 1 ounce in a gallon of water, you can ingest it. I have literally drank it in front of people just to show them that you can do that.
Does it have any medicinal properties?
Well, I haven't had a cold in a very long time. But and I don't want folks to go out there and gargle with this stuff, but at the same time, I have had a lot of home brewers call me up and ask me very interesting questions as far as, well, how do I dispose of it? It's a sanitizer, you know, and I'm on septic tanks. And I go, hey, great, throw it in there. And they go, what are you talking about? Well, the interesting thing about the product, even though I said it's a stone killer, and it is, once it's diluted out and once the pH goes above 3.5, it stops killing. All of its germicidal properties are gone. Once they're gone, it becomes bacterial food. It actually helps septic tanks.
Hmm.
So it's kind of an interesting little thing. It kills at one pH. At another pH, it becomes food.
So it's the pH level that does the trick.
It's the pH that does the trick. And I've also had home brewers that have taken it out and thrown it on their roses and said that the roses haven't looked as good in 5 or 6 years.
Which may be a good way to get the wife involved in the home brewing hobby, or
at least endorsing it
or tolerating it.
It's good for your plants. It's good for your cornies. What a world. What a country.
So what do you say? So you're saying is don't fear the foam, basically.
Yeah, don't fear the foam. And actually, because of the infinite dilution and because it actually does become a food, for the brewers that are actually pitching yeast in the cornies and using it as their primary fermenter, the material will actually kick off and give them a robust fermentation.
So you would think that a sanitizer, if there was a residue of sanitizer in your carboy, and you pitched your wort in there, you pitched your yeast, any residue would have a detrimental effect on the fermentation.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
So how long does Star Sand stay good? Because I've heard of people keeping a 5-gallon carboy of Star Sand around and reusing the solution.
Now, if I put my EPA hat on, EPA says that you have to make a fresh sanitizing solution every time you sanitize, and that's a one size fits all, and that's the caveat that I have to say. However, if I go the other way, the material is kind of interesting. Like I mentioned before, it is a soap. It's an acid anionized detergent. If it's made with deionized water, if the use solution is made with deionized water and there are no minerals in the water itself, the use solution is active for literally months.
Hmm.
If there's minerals in the water, what will happen over a period of time, the minerals will start to win out and they'll start to create a hard water soap. The hard water soap will make the product go cloudy, only because just like when people use bar soap and they get soap tub ring, it works identically. There's no difference in the chemical reactions behind it. And any brewer that uses the product that's in a hard water situation, I always tell them to go to the supermarket and buy a jug of deionized water off the shelf. They'll thank me for it later on, and they do. They call me back up and they say, "Boy, the water, you know, the sanitizing solution's crystal clear." Some of them actually have pH meters, some home brewers, and they go, "My pH is it remains at 3 for 2 or 3 months." I said, "Yeah, you're still sanitizing. You're still killing."
So that's how you test the effectiveness.
You can attest the effectiveness by two ways, either by pH. Now, I know that a lot of folks don't have a pH meter, or by the turbidity of the actual use solution, how cloudy it is.
So theoretically, if your equipment is clean when you sanitize, you shouldn't worry about getting debris from tube or something like that in your sanitizer.
Anytime you get that kind of stuff, you know, it's a good practice to dump it.
Yeah, and it means that you're not doing a good enough job, probably in the cleaning section of the process.
Right.
How much
sanitation is always 90% cleaning.
How much contact time do you have to have with Star Sand?
Star Sand kills in 30 seconds. I have on the label 2 minutes, only because the EPA test is always for 2 minutes. And you're required to put on the label what the EPA test is.
Hmm.
That's another one of those government things.
But 2 minutes is not gonna kill you. It's not. It'll
no.
Won't
no.
won't hurt
and,
you.
And all it is again, like I said, all sterilization is an insurance policy. You're taking out an insurance policy on exactly how you cleaned.
So Star Sand is good for the roses. It worked.
Yeah.
That's not on the label, probably.
No, I'm not allowed to put that on the label either.
It sticks around if you have deionized water and you don't have minerals in the water. You can use it for an indefinite period as long as the pH stays around 3.
Right.
And if it foams, that's a good thing. And don't worry about the residue, because I've actually heard from a couple of people who say they like star sand, but then they have to rinse to get the foam out afterwards.
You know, and it's a personal preference, quite frankly. You know, I mean, you don't have to. If you want to, fine. You know, it doesn't hurt my feelings one way or the other. You know, and I can certainly understand it, because a lot of the stuff that I do is scary.
Yeah, you say chemicals and
the average person, when you hear these things, you know, it's not like, well, it's a chemical, it's got to be good for you. You know, it's not the way the world works anymore.
Even though water is a chemical, and we seem to like that pretty well.
Yeah, even though just about everything that we do is a chemical, one way or the other. But like I said, that's a story for another day.
What else on sanitization? I mean, are there any things? This is the question that I always try to ask at the end of the interview to make sure that I'm not completely clueless. But what else about sanitization have we not talked about that you think is essential?
Well, like I said before, and cleaning without a doubt is the best thing that anybody can do. I'll give you an idea, or what I mean by cleaning is the best thing that anybody can do. I do an awful lot of work with the Rock Bottom Group, Rock Bottom Brewers, which is a national brewing chain across the country. And they have brewers that come in, they leave, they go, they do something else like any other job. And Rock Bottom doesn't look for a brewer when they hire. They look for somebody and they say, "Are you afraid of cleaning?" And a lot of them will look at them and they'll say, "Well, no, I'm here to interview for a brewing job." And they go, no. Brewing is cleaning. If you're not afraid of cleaning, we will teach you how to brew. That's the easy part. The hard part is to teach you guys how to clean. And
yeah, that's funny. People ask me about home brewing, and I say, well, if you like washing dishes, you'll love home brewing.
And that, quite frankly, is the key. I mean, there's a lot of folks that are out there that say, you know, if you use a sanitizer, sanitizers are fine. You use the right sanitizer, and don't worry about it, and go and, you know, go forth and multiply. That's why a lot of folks get turned off about home brewing. They run into so many bad experiences about taking all the time to mash in and to wait the anticipation of the first brew to come off, and then their taste in lactobacillus. That's you know, I mean, it's okay if you want a lambic or something like that. That's great.
Right.
But, you know, most people aren't looking for that. And it all comes down to the fact that they didn't scrub. They didn't clean. It's kind of an interesting little situation when you talk about sanitation, but I really talk about cleaning.
Well, this has been fun.
Anytime. And just so that everybody knows, I do have, they can ask me direct questions. I have on 5starchemicals.com, there's a little section that says Ask Charlie. And if anybody has specific questions or whatnot like that, they can just email me, and I don't care what the question is. I'll give them the straight stuff.
And I can say that I forwarded several questions to you over the past couple of years, I guess, and you've always been prompt to answer them and have given good answers, as far as I can tell. Of course,
now this is a great hobby for folks to be in, and I try to eliminate the fog if I can.
The fog of ignorance.
Well, yeah, and the fog of misinformation.
Right.
There's a lot of misinformation that floats around out there. And I have no axe to grind, like I tell people. I've made one of everything at one time of my life, so I can tell them exactly what they are and how they work.
Yeah, I'm just kind of amazed that we spent the first half of the conversation talking about bleach. When
it's something near and dear to my heart. I've done it once before, you know. But it's one of the products out there that has been mispromoted and misrepresented, and it gets in my craw a lot. Only because new brewers go out, they think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and they all have bad experiences with it. And not to say that it's bad, not to say that it's wrong, it's just misinformation on it.
Well, I appreciate your helping to clear it up.
I try.
Well, thanks, Charlie.
You're quite welcome.
Well, thanks again to Charlie Talley. And Charlie's got a great laugh. If I ever become a comedian, he's going to be in the audience. And we appreciate Charlie's excellent advice and being an excellent resource for the homebrewing community as well. Next week, another great resource to the homebrewing community, David Loxton of Why Yeast returns to the podcast to talk about the life cycle of our favorite microorganism. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And while you're on our site, you can check out our online shop where you can find great pricing on our DVDs and a combo deal to save you even more. In Basic Brewing Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, we walk you through the extract brewing process step by step from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing Stepping into All Grain, we take you through the all grain process from milling your grain to collecting your wort. And you can see a listing of the fine folks across the country and around the world who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it from us online. And we'll pack it up. We, meaning me, will pack it up myself. And thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support. Our featured products this week that were purchased after clicking on that link are Roma, the novel of ancient Rome, and Monty Python and the Holy Grail, special edition.
Neat!
Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what from the Amazon.com link, so don't worry about it. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we'll get a little chunk of that. We appreciate your support. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dodson down there in Austin, Texas, who also designed our logo. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.